podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. In today's episode, we'll resume our conversation with Congressman Chris Stewart of Utah and Congressman Seth Moulton from Massachusetts. In our last episode, we discussed the upcoming 988 Mental Health Crisis Hotline being created by our government that's scheduled to deploy in 2022. We discussed the role each of these congressmen played in the creation of this new program, the importance and the willingness to deal with the mental health struggles out there, their goals and the benefits they anticipate with this three-digit new number and what it can provide, and the advocacy for mental health. We'll resume our talk today by discussing the details and services available with this new 988 three-digit crisis hotline number and how this service can help open up conversations around mental wellness. Tell me just real quick, why 988? How did that come to be the number?
Well, believe it or not, but Congress commissioned another study. A lot of times that's a way just to delay doing anything. But in this case, it was actually a smart move because the professionals at the FCC went out there and did their surveys or whatever else. Chris may know more of the details, but they came back and said a lot of people wanted a 611 number or something like that. But they said, no, the best option is 988. It's not used by anyone right now, and it is easy to remember. I mean, I didn't know what to think of it when I first heard it, but yeah, it is easy to remember.
It kind of sticks with you.
Yeah. And, you know, there were, as I said, there's some people, some organizations that are very possessive of their numbers. And I understand that. I'm not criticizing that. You know, the telecoms don't want to give up their customer service number that they've had for several years. And there was original thought that it needs to be like 911, that it needed to be, you know, blank 11, some number 11. And, you know, you can kind of see, yeah, that would make sense, you know, because it's kind of what something we're used to. But I actually think 988 is a better number because it's not confusing with these others because people do think of 611 or 511. They do know that 711. They do know there's other uses that. Put those aside completely. Let's go with something new. And I do think 988 is you know, easy enough to remember and wasn't taken. I got to say one more thing, kind of, again, some things that both of you have mentioned. As Seth was saying, you don't want to wake up in the middle of the night, be in the middle of this confrontation or crisis and not know the number. You also don't want to call that number and not have someone answer or have them say, hey, look, we're kind of busy. Can we call you back? You know, that doesn't happen when you call 911. It can't happen when you call 988, which has been part of the reason that we've had this little bit of a slow rollout, because the states have to be prepared to take these calls, because we know people, once they know this, it's going to be used. It's going to increase access. And because it's increasing access to help, it's going to require more resources. And that's one of the challenges we've had, is to get some of the states prepared for this and have people who are trained and actually can help and have the background and the knowledge to provide the assistance that's so critical, especially in a moment of real emotion. And it's taken a little bit of time to get there. And some states, honestly, are in much better position than some others. But we hope and our expectation is that by the time this is rolled out across the nation, that everyone's had a chance to catch up and prepare for these calls that we know will come.
And Chris has made a really important point that I always try to make myself, but I've forgotten, which is to say that 988 is not operational yet. Well, there are some cell networks that have already started to implement it. But just so everyone listening hears this today, it will be implemented soon, and we're working to get a good advertising campaign up to help publicize it once it's fully up and running. But don't count on that number yet. It's still in progress.
Just a quick note on that. Until that time, 2022, it's still the number being used right now, 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-TALK. What I really appreciate is the advocacy around mental health, you know, with the COVID crisis that we're going through, and still not out of the woods yet. What we're seeing and what's being revealed is some of the areas around mental health that we haven't seen before. You know, we're kind of a manic society where we're going Mach 2 with our hair on fire, and we don't stop a whole lot of times, but we've been forced and mandated to stop a lot of our lives. And as we have done, along with the stressors around COVID, we've seen some real significant mental health illnesses occur. Not occur, yes, but also just emerge in kind of a new form of understanding and awareness. And so what you're raising here, I think, is an advocacy around acknowledging in the same way that we take care of our financial health, our physical health, our nutritional health, our relational health, what if we take care of our own mental health as a way that's just naturally as thought of and as easily accepted? You're talking about the services they're going to be responding to. And as I've been reading about this 988, it sounds like there are several kind of tiers to it. One is a 24/7 crisis call center. Right now, I know there's about 180 local and state funded crisis centers, but the same idea here, where there's going to be a 24/7 crisis center, someone to talk to that can connect you to local services or dispatch a mobile team if necessary. I guess the understanding that the next tier is going to be a mobile crisis team, someone to respond if necessary, send out to help de-escalate some of these crises that can be de-escalated and minimized. The ERs are not the best places. I've worked in trauma hospitals. I've worked in mental health centers, organization institutions. I've worked in inpatient psychiatric. The ER is not the best place to handle a mental health crisis, is it? So be able to manage it sometimes on the ground right there. But also the third tier can be a crisis stabilization program where someone can go if needed with trauma-informed programs for observation stabilization. So there's some really great services that you're encouraging the states to determine, to put into place that meets the needs of their specific population. I really like that.
That's right. And you know, the 911 analogy is applicable here too. I mean, you call 911 if you got a 5-alarm fire in your neighborhood. You call 911 if you've got a little grease fire in the kitchen stove that you think you can put out yourself with a fire extinguisher, but you want to be sure. So it's the same way. You need to have a central number to call. You know you can get help, and then they will be able to direct you to the resources that you need.
Yeah.
You know, one of the challenges that we are going to have, and this is going to help with this, but I think it's still going to remain a bit of a challenge, and that is if you call in a fairly metropolitan area, for example, where I am in Salt Lake City, and you need help, you need a crisis response team, they can do that, and they could have someone there within a few minutes. Yeah. If you call in some of the more rural parts of my state or my district or other places in the United States, Seth, probably not so much applicable in Massachusetts just because you are, you know, you're more densely populated, but I'm sure you have some rural parts and communities as well. And that's one of the focuses that we've had is to how do we fund and how do we provide these resources so that if you live 2 hours away from, you know, a major city or a metropolitan area, can you still get the help that you need? And do we have resources for those folks too? Because surprisingly, and I think part of it is because of the lack of resources, communities that we think aren't or wouldn't be as vulnerable actually are at least as vulnerable, in some cases more vulnerable. The rural communities, you think, well, that's a healthy lifestyle. They're outside. They're obvious. You know, many of them are physically engaged in a occupation where they're getting lots of exercise, et cetera. But it turns out some of them have actually a higher rate of attempted suicide or suicide than does some of the larger cities. And our youth as well is obviously a population that we want to emphasize and want to have resources for.
You bet.
It can be very lonely out in the woods. It's true.
It can be very lonely out in the woods. That's exactly right. And that isolation is part of the biggest challenge of someone feels like I'm in this alone. There's no sense of that people are going to understand me and I'm in it all alone. So absolutely, it is lonely in the woods.
It's been incredibly empowering to me to just have so many fellow veterans speak to me and say, you know, I'm dealing with this too. And I mean, even people, my gosh, after I came public with this, I could talk about it with people on my team. I had even kept this hidden from people on my team. And I remember having a conversation with one person I work very closely with and saying, well, you know, now you know, I've got a therapist appointment next week. And he said, oh, I have a therapist appointment too. I had no idea, right? But it was the young Marines in my platoon. And I say young because they were younger than me. I was one of the oldest as the platoon commander. When I served in Iraq, it was mostly 18, 19-year-old guys that I led. And some of them had the courage to talk about this first, to talk about their struggles with me. And I looked at them and I said, my gosh, if they can share this stuff, then I can share it too. And so I first opened up to them long before I was willing to talk about it publicly. And what a great experience for all of us to just know that there were other friends going through this too.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Most of us spend more time at work than anywhere else doing anything else. So why not spend that time in a job you love? Introducing Triad's Jobs Marketplace, the only job site dedicated specifically to behavioral and mental health professionals. featuring more than 1,000 open jobs from dozens of behavioral and mental health employers, and searchable by location, professional field, employment type, specialization, and more. Jobs Marketplace helps you find your next career opportunity. Full-time, part-time, or gig time, make the most of your time. To access Jobs Marketplace, register for your free professional account at hellotriad.com/BHT. That's hellotriad.com/BHT. And then click to Jobs Marketplace. If you're already a member of the Triad community, visit app.hellotriad.com/jobs. That's app.hellotriad.com/jobs. Visit us today and take your next career step tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, Seth, I think, well, one comment real quick. You say you were one of the older, my gosh, you were probably mid-20s, right?
That's
something
right.
Like that. You were still a young man. And the leadership responsibilities that we put on our soldiers, the NCOs and the officer corps, and the stress that we put on our young enlisted soldiers, I mean, it's impossible for those people like me who have never experienced that. Again, I'm a military veteran, but I did not experience that. I just think it's impossible for us to understand the kind of pressures that our veterans have experienced. And they're young. They're not, you know, someone who's in midlife who has some experience, maturity around them that may help them in putting some of these things in perspective or gaining some of the tools that some of us acquire as time goes by. Right. And the second comment is just how I just think it's been such a godsend for our veterans to lead out and to talk about this, because you don't have to be a veteran to experience PTSD. There are other experiences in life that will lead that to people, you know, some very difficult and painful experiences that many people may experience. And you don't have to be a veteran to be dealing with thoughts of suicide or depression or anxiety. Yeah. But the fact our veterans in many cases have been willing to lead out, a culture that the society looks upon them as they are leaders, they are some of the best America has, they've played a very positive role in helping to open up this conversation. And Seth, I think that you're a great example of that.
No, thank you, Chris. I mean, just look at the veterans of COVID, these frontline paramedics, firefighters, police officers, nurses, doctors, orderlies who have seen death on a scale that we never imagined before. A lot of them are coming out with post-traumatic stress. There has been a shockingly high rate of suicide among doctors and nurses in our nation's best hospitals. And so that's absolutely right, Chris. Veterans set the example here, but there are so many people in our lives who deal with post-traumatic stress, and we've got to make sure everyone knows that this is something that can be cured. I think that's another
absolutely
really important point.
Yeah.
This isn't just a condition you have to live with. I mean, I'm good. I mean, I still see a therapist because I think it's really healthy to check in every once in a while, but I don't have the bad dreams and wake up in, you know, cold sweats and things that I used to experience when I was first dealing with post-traumatic stress, because I've been able to get treatment. And that's a message that everyone in America needs to hear as well.
Yeah. Hey, Seth, I love the way you call it post-traumatic stress, not PTSD. You dropped that last. And I think that's a meaningful change. And because, you know, I'm not sure that that is a great acronym to add disorder onto the end of it. Now, doctor, I'm not a doctor, and maybe there's reasons and things I don't see. But I think that's a real positive, a much more positive way to describe this.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I think we do it clinically to identify the level of, you know, impairment that it can create in one's life. But, you know, Seth, what you're saying is this is a normal reaction to abnormal situations. And we've talked in prior shows about trauma, a lot of trauma we've talked about in the show, and said some really great guests on it. And we talk about what you're suggesting, Chris, that there are the big T traumas. It's the 9/11s. It's the you know, the war experiences that are beyond words. And it's traumas, those experiences that, you know, are outside the realm of normal experience that we don't have the ability to just naturally process and work through. But there are ways, like you're saying, Seth, that we can work through these things and reclaim the life that we're supposed to be living and put these things in a proper place that we can carry them so that they are not so eclipsing in our life. But Chris, like what you're saying too, it doesn't always have to be the war veteran stories. It doesn't always have to be that 9/11, you know, story. It can be what we call little T's. It can be relational issues. It can be ones that are no less impacting, but oftentimes those aren't as identified. And sometimes those go quiet and those it's lonely in those woods as well. So I mean, what you're emphasizing here is good. Yeah, Seth.
In fact, I mean, I have tremendous trust for leaders who have been through crises like this.
Oh, absolutely. Been
through these traumatic experiences and learned how to deal with them. Because, you know, if you've got someone in the proverbial situation room and that's the most stressful situation he or she's ever been in their life, and that's not a good sign. But if you get someone in there is like, oh, no, that, you know, been there before, he knows how to handle a situation like that, that's a good thing. So look, this can be very empowering, dealing yeah. with your mental health issues, dealing proactively to strengthen or working proactively to strengthen yeah. your mental health, your resilience. This is all a great thing for our country, but we just need to open up this conversation more.
And I think this is a great way to do it. I think the 988 is a great way to allow people to be directed to the services that are most appropriate with those that are best trained around that. You know, we're talking about trauma too. You don't have to be in a trauma. There's vicarious trauma as well, where I'm hearing or seeing when 9/11 was happening, we had to tell people to turn their TVs off because the repeated exposure to seeing these things was creating trauma for people. They couldn't sleep. They're becoming irritable, depressed, anxious. And so even vicarious trauma is another piece of this type of trauma. And what you're raising also, Seth, is our next round of trauma victims are the medical professionals that are, that's going to be the next wave of where trauma is going to hit. And in fact, we're going to be having someone on our show who's a surgeon and a COVID kind of frontline worker that we work with, a colleague and I, that we run a group for practitioners, medical practitioners that are going through this whole time to help with their mental health in a proactive way. But we're going to be talking about preparing services for those docs that once the COVID kind of gets behind us, there's going to be this wave of emotion, this post-traumatic stress that's going to be catching up with them, that they're going to need some tools and some things they can even do now to prepare for that. So appreciate naming that part as well. Hey, tell us when this is going to become active, 988.
Well, our expectation is it's early 2022. Okay. We were hoping January, but again, we've had to allow for a little more time for some of the states to begin to, you know, get their infrastructure in place. FCC had a delay here or there. You know, I wish it was easy, but sometimes it's not. But I think, and Seth may have more updated information again, but my understanding is that early 2022, February, March, April timeframe, and hopefully across the nation shortly after that.
No, that's right. The deadline we've formally set is July of 2022. As Chris said, we're hoping it will be up earlier. But, you know, as we implement this, we'll also be learning, as Chris said, from different practices in different parts of the country and seeing what works best. So we're going to be committed to continuing to improve this and learning those best practices, making sure they're shared nationwide. It's going to be a big deal when it comes online, but Chris and I know that our work won't be over.
Yeah, really well done. What has been the, we're kind of coming around the barn here, we're kind of coming home in our time together today. What's been the most meaningful part for each of you in this process?
For me, it's the stories that people have shared. I remember speaking at a VFW and a veteran from the Korean War came up to me and said, you know, I've been keeping stuff inside of me for half a century. And I'm going to talk about it now. Another person that I've known for years in my local community who I had no idea had been in a terrible car accident and tragically lost one of his sons. He said, you know, I've never really been able to deal with this, but if you can talk about it, Seth, I'm going to talk about it too. That's been the most amazing experience to me. And someone said to me recently that just because there's been some good publicity around this bill and how broadly supported it is in the Congress, what a difference it's going to make in people's lives. That alone has started a conversation about mental health across dinner tables all over America, even before it's implemented. So there's nothing I've done in Congress I'm more proud of. There's nothing I've done that will save more lives. And I'm so proud to have a partner like Chris in this effort.
That's great.
Well, and I just feel the same. I mean, Congress can be a very frustrating place. I think it's frustrating regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on. There's periods of time when, you know, maybe your team's doing the things you want to do, but then a few years later, you know, you're sitting in a situation where that's not the case. But even in the best of times, Congress can be a frustrating environment. And I just agree with Seth. Looking back, I'll say, if I do nothing else, if I look back and I say I did nothing else, but I did this, that will justify the time of and the sacrifice of my family in allowing me to do this. And Doctor, to your question about, you know, maybe most impactful, it would be the same thing that Seth said. It's the stories. And two of them just very quickly, because I think they illustrate a point. A young family whose 17-year-old daughter committed suicide. Walking through the airport and talking to one of the, I want to be a little bit unclear in the details because people sure. here in Utah would recognize this person. But I mean, one of the greatest leaders in our state. And as we're talking and he is in tears saying about his child who committed suicide. And both of those families feel like if they had been able to get help to their children, they may have been able to prevent that. And in fact, probably could have been able to prevent that, but they didn't know where to get the help. And they're both, I think, represent the gratitude of this is going to help people who in a most vulnerable moment that they will be able to get the help that they need. And those are the things that have made this, I think, meaningful for all of us who've been able to work with this.
That's really good. In those moments, it's pretty dark and we don't know our way out sometimes. And to have somebody come alongside us that understands and says, hey, I'm going to be with you through this whole time. Let's take this path.
Yep.
Exactly. And I think 988 is the first step for someone to realize there's someone on the other side that knows what's going on, can understand and help them understand a way out. As we come to a close in our time, any resources that you would refer us to? One, I'd like to put out just real quick before 988 comes into play in 2022, the number for those that still need to access these services, suicide prevention and crisis response is still 1-800-273-TALK. But gentlemen, any other resources you'd like to kind of leave us with? We'll also put these up on our site.
Well, I think there's some formal resources, but I would encourage people to, everyone is surrounded by someone who cares about them. Yes. Everyone has someone who cares about them. Your parents, your spouse, your children, friends, reach out to people. And yes. for those of us, reach out as well. We all know someone who needs help. We may not be aware at the moment, but if we ask questions and if we show caring, sometimes people will reach back to us. So I think a lot of it is these formal methods of help, which are so important. A lot of it is just that human interaction and caring for one another, like we all really in our hearts want to do.
Sometimes that greatest resource is sitting right there next to us, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Well said. I mean, Chris and I will continue to provide updates on our websites about how the process is going with the three-digit number. There are some nonprofits doing good work here. Samaritans answers the phones right now where I live, and the National Foundation for Suicide Prevention has some good information. And the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Agency, SAMHSA, is a great resource, SAMHSA.gov. And finally, if you're a veteran, you can learn more by texting the Veterans Crisis Line at 838-255. So veterans 838-255. Text to talk to someone there. But I share Chris's dream here too, that this will just inspire more conversations at home with your friends. If you're willing to open up a little, I think increasingly you're going to find people willing to listen on the other side.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. You know, your work in creating this 988 three-digit new number here is really going to be America's new mental health safety net, when you think about it, which I believe is going to help reduce suicide, you know, rates and ideally provide these really need-specific responses for those in a mental health crisis. And subsequently, we're going to anticipate better outcomes for those with mental health needs. So thank you so much for your role in this. And we so appreciate you being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
And great to have you here.
Yeah.
And to our listeners with us today, we want to thank you as well for joining us. And we'll look forward to having you being with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.